Let's check in with Tom Skilling now over at Channel 9, and we're so happy to have you on the show today, Tom. We got lots to talk about in the weather, of course. We got the fall colors starting to pop here in the Chicago area. Last we talked, that wasn't so much the case, but they're coming out stronger, and I know there are some changes in the weather, too. But I got to ask you, did you see this thing with the Nobel Peace Prize winners, the two scientists at the Stanford University professors? Did you see what happened overnight?
No. No, I have not, Anna. No.
I know you're a fan of the scientific community. I want to just play this for you because these two Stanford professors won the Nobel Prize, Bob and Paul, and they're not just professors, they're neighbors. And apparently Paul, they didn't have a number for him, so Bob had to wake up Paul in the middle of the night to let him know. Here's a little bit of wait, listen. Here's the audio. Here's the audio, Tom. I want to get your reaction.
All right.
Paul?
Uh-huh.
It's Bob Wilson.
Yeah.
You've won the Nobel Prize. And so they're trying to reach you, but they cannot. They don't seem to have a number for you.
We gave them your cell phone number.
Wow. Okay.
Will you answer your phone?
Yeah.
You've got to love it. You know, I'll tell you something. They ran that video last night in our newscast. I couldn't figure out what we were looking at first. It was a nighttime video from one of these security cameras, and he looked almost ghost-like. I thought it was some kind of animation. Can you believe that, Anna? That somebody would come and knock on your door and say, hey, you just won the Nobel Peace Prize.
The prize in economics. I mean, these two, it's a doorbell cam, and the whole thing's caught. And he is so friggin' calm. I mean, I would have been like, you won the Nobel Prize. Get up. I mean, Bob, Paul. I mean, oh, my gosh, what a huge honor. And to think they couldn't even get in touch with them.
You know, there's something very human about that, isn't there? I mean, really. You wonder how in the world the Nobel Committee wouldn't have had a phone number that would work. But there's something awfully human. And I'll tell you, it underscores something. And that is that scientists are humans, too. And I think that's kind of neat. But can you imagine? What an honor, huh?
No, and I'm sure you see this, too, with you know, you're one of the brilliant minds in weather, but you meet with other folks in your world of meteorology and that kind of thing and environmental issues. And it just, you know, when you all get together, I'm sure you see this too. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know, someone forgets where their pencil is, and yet they're this brilliant mind in you know, some field of study.
It is so true. You know, years ago, I used to visit John Coleman, and I visited Harry Volkman too, for that matter. And I remember saying to John, I'd see him at various scientific meetings and all, and he was always, his dad had been a professor of English down at Southern Illinois University. So he was completely, you know, he wasn't awed by PhDs and all the way I was. I was a young college student at the time. PhDs held by career in their hands, as they do with all young students. And so you stood in awe of these people, and I remember I said to him, John, how is it that you can address these people and not be intimidated by their you know, their degrees and their accomplishments and all? He said, Tom, he said, you got to remember something. We all get up in the morning and we all dress the same way and we brush our teeth and everything else. And I thought, well, you know, that kind of demystified the whole thing for me. I thought, you know, that's very true. You know, scientists are people, too. They really are. And so anyway, but it's very true. Anna.
It is. No, it is. Well, you're so approachable. So you're not that guy at all, even though you are that. I mean, like everyone I've ever talked to, Tom, has always said that about you. And it's such it's one of the reasons you're just so loved here. One of the many, many reasons. But it's interesting because I just got such a kick out of that to see that these
is.
Two like exceptional guys are like, come on, wake up, Paul. You won the Nobel Prize in economics.
I know. I wasn't sure where you were going with that, and then when you explained what this was all about, I remember seeing the video. Yeah, it is pretty remarkable.
It's fantastic.
It really is nice.
And congrats to them, and thanks to all the folks in our scientific community for the breakthroughs that happen all the time. You know, Tom, I want to get to the weather, but can I mention something else that came up? Because I know you also are very involved in the environment and that sort of thing. And there was a report out about the ocean and the microplastics. It was in the New York Times a couple days ago. It's been picked up by many, many other news organizations since. We've heard so much about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, that huge floating pile of plastic debris that's two sizes the times of Texas out there between California and Hawaii. Now they're saying, hey, it's not just plastics on the surface. There are even more beneath the surface.
Oh, yeah. They break down. And in part of the breakdown process, they release greenhouse gases on top of it. And you know, Anna, there's great concern because as we move away from fossil fuels to power our vehicles in the years to come and decades to come, it's believed that the oil industry will shift more to plastics and so forth. And, you know, you see these pictures from all over the world. I remember in particular this image as a fifth grader. Our teacher had traveled to the Taj Mahal, and she would bring these beautiful pictures in of places she had studied in the world. And she was so impressed with the Taj Mahal and communicated that to us, her young students. And I remember seeing this picture, I think it was in the Atlantic, of different plastic dumps around the world. And here's the Taj Mahal, and next to it is this dump of plastic. And piles of plastic. And you're right, there are these gyres, these oceanic circulations within which these, pools of plastic are located and migrating around. They say the Indian Ocean is populated by these. And it's tragic, you know, because remember Jacques Cousteau years ago was telling us about what he was seeing in his undersea explorations and all. So it's something to be concerned about, especially when you hear, sea creatures and all eating this stuff and choking on it and all the rest. It's sad. It really is.
Yeah.
In places in the world that you thought were untouched by human civilization and the waste products we produce.
Mm-hmm. And it's even out there, you're right, in pristine areas. Of course, the Tribune had covered pretty extensively how the Great Lakes, of course, you think of these microplastics being in the ocean, but the Great Lakes are not spared by this sort of environmental damage either. We've got microplastics. It's a growing problem in the Great Lakes, and they're finding more and more, and they're testing it, and they're testing the fish, as you point out, fish we eat, and it gets into, they're so small, so tiny that they aren't always filtered out in our drinking water either. They're tiny, tiny, tiny particles.
Oh, it's true. And you know, Anna, what's interesting is they've even found evidence of these microplastics in Antarctica, of all places.
What?
You know, you'd think one of the most remote, hard-to-reach areas in the world. And yet, our winds, it all goes to show that this atmosphere of ours and the whole natural system is one great big interconnected system. And, as they say in these Las Vegas ads, what goes on in Las Vegas doesn't stay in Las Vegas. Well, it's true in the atmosphere, too. You know, distant fires and other pollutants and all have a way of migrating to other places on the planet. So there are no two ways about it.
Hey, Tom, can you stick around for just a minute here? I want to ask you about our local weather and some changes in the forecast. We just got to pause for just a second with Tom Skilling, and we'll be back with more in just a second here. All right, Tom, we got to get to our weather here. Tom Skilling is with us again. We talked about some environmental stuff and some other things going on in the world. But here, we had a gorgeous warm weekend, right? And now we're sort of looking at maybe things dropping a bit later on.
Yeah. There's a blocking pattern, a big warm air dome that's going to assemble all the way from Greenland to the North Pole. And you might say, well, now what in the world does that have to do with our weather? But we found that's a cold signal for Chicago in the Midwest, because when you develop a warm air pool, the jet stream buckles up there around it, goes way north. And you get a very wavy pattern to develop back to the west in North America. When that happens, when warmth develops there, we tend to turn our upper steering winds in from Canada. They run all the way from the Yukon down into the Midwest with cold air or cooler air in tow. So, you know, it's early in the season yet. We don't have a snowpack across Canada. And therefore, you know, you don't get the kind of Arctic outbreaks that we'll see in several months. But nonetheless, we're going into a cooler weather regime. But the good news is, Anna, before that happens, we're going to warm up tomorrow. Tomorrow will be a windy day. We'll probably get up to the mid-70s tomorrow ahead of this downturn that could feature later this week, this coming weekend, and much of next week. The longest string of consecutive daytime highs only in the 50s that we've seen since way back in late February and early March of earlier this year. So it's a significant cool down. And you know what else? It's also possible in the coming 7 days we'll see the first flakes of snow in the upper Midwest. And it could even be the first sticking snow up in, say, the Northwoods of Minnesota and up across Canada and the higher elevations of the Northern Rockies. So, you know, it's that time of the year. This happens.
Is it?
As our days grow shorter. Yeah.
This is not, so it's snow already. Tom, I just heard you say snow. You did say snow, but you said not necessarily
Chicago,
north.
Yes, right. We want to be careful to make that clear. No, we've got a windy, wet storm coming, an autumn-type storm, early next week that could produce substantial cold rainfall around here. But, no, if you go north, northern Wisconsin, upper Michigan, northern Minnesota, they could see the first flakes of snow in the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're getting there. Our first snow flurries here don't typically occur until on or about October 31st, around Halloween. And so we're a ways away from that. And, you know, I was checking, Anna, even with the cool weather coming in, we're not done with the warm weather yet. In fact, we ran some stats. We found out that 97% of years since 1871, that's how far our records go back here, in 97% of years have produced 70-degree temperatures between now and the first week in November, and 39% of those years have produced an 80-degree temperature yet between now and the first week in November. So it can still get warm, and no doubt will, but we've got decidedly cooler weather coming after the warm weather of tomorrow. And by the way, there's going to be a lot of wind, not only this afternoon, but tomorrow. There could be 40-plus mile-per-hour wind gusts, and it looks like a windy weekend and a windy early part of next week as well. And that's a part of autumn as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like, that's kind of one of the beauties of autumn, because it's just, you know, there's a change in the season and you just feel all different types of weather. Although I would like to put in a request that we don't get a snowfall on October 31st. I mean, we have enough headwinds for Halloween this year, Tom, that we really don't need any kind of like bad weather.
No, I hear you. And what we're talking about is first arrival on or about October 31st are the first snowflakes. You don't tend to get really significant sticking snow in most years. You can get it in some years, but you don't in most years get it until you get into, you know, November, and even more so, obviously, December. So, and one other thing to note, Anna, we had a warm summer around here, one of the warmest on the books. It's interesting. You would think after a warm summer that we'd be, you know, it'd be preordained that we have a cool winter coming up. But we've done an in-house study, and we found that 60% of winters which follow a warm summer are themselves above normal in temperature overall. Doesn't mean you can't have snowstorms or Arctic outbreaks, but it means overall, when you average all the winter months up, you tend to wind up near or even a little above normal. And so we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if that's the way it works this year.
Yeah, I like the positive attitude. So the fall colors, we got to circle back, because last we spoke, last week, this day,
I was
still saying, you know, I was in Michigan, and we went on a fall colors walk, and we didn't see all that many. Still a beautiful walk, no doubt about it. We went to a farm, and we hung out, we did a pumpkin patch and all. It was fun, but it did not look like fall yet, and it's starting to turn a little bit. I'm starting to see some of the foliage here in the city. In the area.
It really is. It really is, Anna. I'll tell you, we get pictures from viewers, and listeners. And I'm telling you that the pictures that have been pouring in just the last week have been spectacular. I mean, we really have had these colors blossom. Actually, you know, the colors are beyond peak. If you go way up to Upper Michigan, they've had their peak now. Hmm. But we're getting into our peak season now. It's about this time of the year. So it's gorgeous. I was looking out. I'm up here in the Edgewater neighborhood, and it's beautiful to see the trees turning here in the city. And we're the last place to see the trees go because the warmth of the lake tends to slow them their arrival down a little bit here, typically.
Oh.
But they're coming out.
Yeah, and it looks beautiful, and I love this. I just love this time of year. I just love it. It's just gorgeous.
It's true. The one thing that concerns me is all this wind. I'm afraid we're going to blow some leaves down, and it's a shame. You kind of wish these things would linger. But we're not through it yet. So we have some beautiful viewing yet to come and underway. So that's marvelous.
Give us the next couple
of
days, then, Tom. Let us know what to expect.
Yeah, 77 tomorrow. There'll be a west-southwest wind that will build to 40 miles an hour in gusts during the afternoon. A lot of sunshine. There'll be a little increase in clouds. The front goes through tomorrow night, and that starts the cool down. So we go down to mid to upper 50s on Thursday and Friday. Saturday, a little bump up, could get up close to 60. Then another reinforcing cool shot comes down Sunday, Monday, and there'll be a low pressure of some note coming through early next week. So it'll probably be kind of rainy and windy, and there'll be some really chilly air coming down after that. We might even have a couple of days next week where the highs don't get out of the 40s. So that'll be the first around here since way, way back early in this past spring. So, but again, keep in mind, there are statistics to support the fact we still have some warm days ahead.
Nice.
The so-called Indian summer period. That's a beautiful time of the year after the first frost.
It is a beautiful time. Hey, I know you got to run, Tom, but I want to ask you very quickly here about Ray Cortopazzi, the new principal anchor over there. He's been on the show. He seems like a heck of a nice guy. How's it going over there?
He is a joy. I'll tell you, Ray hails from Dalton, and he's worked the last 20-plus years down in Indianapolis. His dream always was to get back to Chicago, and in particular to WGN.
Oh.
Well, as luck would have it, he's had the opportunity. He is delightful. You know, we love Joe Donlan, who's gone over to News Nation.
Right.
Joe is just fantastic.
Absolutely.
And Joe came in from the Pacific Northwest, really a sharp guy in his feet and everything else. But Ray is every bit, he's very much like Joe, and we love Joe. So this is all good.
Yeah.
Ray has been a delight.
I told him,
thanks for bringing him up.
I feel like he just fit in the second he got here. You know, it's just, he's just that guy, like he just fit right into Channel 9 and everything you do there. And just a good salt of the earth Midwestern guy, and really sharp too, and doesn't take himself too seriously, as they gave him a little bit of a hard time on the morning show.
Anna, you have nailed him. That's exactly the way it is. I remember when we went over for a promo shoot, you do that before you new people are introduced. So Micah and Dan and I were there, and we knew this guy was really going to fit in, as you say, just like
perfect
a pea in a pod, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Tom, thank you for the time. I love talking to you, so thank you.
Right. If the feeling is mutual, Anna. You have a great afternoon. Enjoy this gorgeous sun, and we'll talk next week.
We'll talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
All right. You bet.
Bye for now. Tom Skilling's appearance, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems.